Wednesday, June 27, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Now, I didn't do a show yesterday because I actually did an interview with Doug from The Shift, another channel, which I was real honored to be on the show. He's a great guy. And as well as I wanted to make sure that the censored episode, which is the reason I did my other live stream, got more attention, which, as you know, was very specifically had to do with the context of about Yemen and what's going on there and the 370 children that are they're dead due to the actions of the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition, which comes from a U.N. report, which, you know, of course, I mean, anything can be manipulated. But the point is that that's backed by a lot of information. And the point is that they did not want that to get out. They censored the video. They locked it in private and they wouldn't allow it to be shown. And I went through the whole ridiculous appeal process. You can check out the live stream to show you what that was all about. And I didn't hear back. And so I just deleted it, uploaded it under a different name, and it's up there now. So that's why I wanted to let that get a little more attention. So funny enough, once I decided to skip a day, of course, all kinds of things happen. Now, most importantly, there's a lot of stuff that I think is meant to continue to distract us, and not because it's not real or important, but there's a lot of stuff being thrown out there. And the first one I want to just touch on quickly, because I don't want this to be taken as some kind of a partisan advocation for anybody in Congress or in either side of the false two-party divide, but there's an excellent video by Trey Gowdy, or rather by, you know, in during the congressional hearing with the FBI and Rod Rosenstein, where Trey Gowdy just comes out and talks about everything he's frustrated about. Which good for him, because I agree that this investigation has yielded absolutely nothing, that they're lying to them. They're asking people not to respond. They're not giving them the information they need, and on and on. And again, this is not an advocation for either side of the two-party deception. But the point is that, and obviously most of them, I think all of them were Republicans during this that were speaking out like this. But it's factually correct. And I think it's important to see that even members of Congress are getting just incredibly frustrated with the fact that this is continuing on, and they hold up the evidence in their hand. Like, we know this is happening and yet nothing is coming of it, which is also a knock on them themselves. You know, if we have evidence, do something about it. But the point is that that's a very interesting video for you to check out. I thought about actually showing a clip, but not worth it. I'll have that in the show notes for you to look at. Now, the next point is the shooting in Maryland. That is something that I think is important to discuss quickly. I don't want to get too far into it because everybody's talking about it. All of the mainstream media, a lot of independent media, as usual, because it gets a lot of clicks. People want to know what's going on. I mean, these things for me, unless there's very clear evidence of some kind of a conspiracy theory or manipulation going on, or rather just conspiracy fact, unless that's the case, it's just another shooting, which happens all the time. And before I get into the points there, I want to state beforehand that many come out and say, because all the conspiracy concepts and the reality behind hoaxes and staged events and false flags are very, very real. As many of you know, I talk about that all the time. It happens. It's verifiable. But saying that, many come out and say, okay, well, you know, all these events can't be staged or conspiracies. And with that, I agree. But it's not that they're all like that. Take a look at the stats and the information, and you'll see how many shootings take place around this country, and not just gang-related or crime-related. It might actually surprise you how many like that take place. And they're not all covered by the media. So they're not all some conspiracy, right? We must ask ourselves why they're covering the specific ones that they are. Why are they picking these ones out and pushing them forward? It could be because it's an orchestrated event, an FBI, MKUltra type thing where they create this event to happen. Or it could just be that they're picking out an event like this to put it forward so everybody gets all worked up with fear and anger, so we miss some of the other topics I'm going to get into today. And that's an important thing for us to understand, because that's very much what happens on a regular basis. But all that being said, there are some interesting points that I want to quickly go over. One article from the freethoughtproject.com was discussing an active shooter drill that took place by the Annapolis police a week before the event, which is very interesting. I talk about these active shooter drills all the time and how these things happen. Like 9/11 is the best example, how they were actually conducting drills about planes flying into the Twin Towers right before planes flew into the Twin Towers. And then they go on to deny that, saying, who would have ever thought that planes could have done this? And, you know, kind of pretend like it's not real, when in fact, it's very clear that they were preparing for it. So these things happen almost every single time, especially before the big events, the ones that we can highlight as very clear manipulated events, whether it's hoaxed or coaxed forward by the FBI. Always we see these drills beforehand. But then it's also important to kind of think about the fact that drills happen like this a lot, especially in regard to schools today. Every school now conducts these drills like on a weekly basis. So it's interesting to consider that in the larger context that, you know, an event happens and you can go, oh, well, there was a drill last week. Of course, there are drills every week, but it doesn't mean it's not important to note. So this article is important because the fact that they had an active drill shoot, active shooter drill a week before for the Annapolis police, that does stand out for me. So that's important to note. And the next point is that apparently he was reported to the police twice before the event, which is also important to note. Everything's always important to note, but it doesn't really mean that much. I mean, this guy, I'll give you some links to the story. The fact that it was this ongoing issue with him and the news agency and how he was in like a lawsuit with them. And clearly he was a little unhinged and he was angry. So he was threatening people and he was going over there all the time. So it makes sense they called the police. I don't think that really means too much, but this whole story is different, right? I mean, this guy is not what he usually is. They claim, I guess he like hurt his fingertips so they couldn't identify him, which kind of goes against wanting to be, you know, promoted. Nonetheless, the mainstream media is always promoting these things. And they also used a shotgun, which is different. But to me, this just stands out as just another ridiculous shooting that's being used by the mainstream media to keep us from looking everywhere else. Meanwhile, a lot of people try to make a conspiracy theory out of it, but it doesn't mean it's not. It just simply, to me, it doesn't seem like that's the case. And then the bigger point for me here is that, you know, the whole Milo Yiannopoulos angle, where he's being blamed for things where he basically responded to asks for comments and basically said, oh, I can't wait for, you know, shooters to gun you down, or kind of, you know, paraphrasing what he said. But it was in jest. He's a provocateur. He's a troll. That's what he does for a living. So the point that he said these things in private conversations have no bearing on what actually happened. The point that the Observer published that, it still shouldn't even matter, but it wasn't even him that put it out there. I mean, even if he did, even if he stood up on CNN and said that, it still is not his fault that somebody went out and did that. This is a very clear effort to kind of make this yelling fire in a theater concept extremely broadly applied to people just like me. So I can talk about a certain event or suggest that this may come to pass. And then if it does, I'm somehow liable, or you know, there's some kind of, you know, connection there that I have to be held accountable for somehow being related to the fact that this guy went out and did something crazy. It's very ridiculous, juvenile thinking. And I think it's intentional. That's why I think the whole Milo aspect is being pushed. Maybe that's the entire point. Maybe it's all driven towards that angle. But ultimately, I think the shooting is one more thing being pushed out there to keep us looking at other stories I'm going to get into today. And the last one that I want to quickly go over is the concept of this, you know, federal agents interrupting the CBS interview with former ICE whistleblower, which is being pushed by a lot of people, independent media, by mainstream media. But it's pretty ridiculous because, I mean, the idea is that this guy was part of ICE and that he ultimately was just offended by the fact that they asked him to, you know, kind of bend the truth. And it's like, really? I mean, so this story is ultimately telling us that the government lies. Oh my God, right? Or that government intimidates whistleblowers. I'm shocked. I mean, it shouldn't be that surprising to us that these things happen. There's nothing new in this story, but it's being used for the immigration debate to pit us against each other, just like usual. And it's really just meant to fuel the fire of this fake argument to keep us screaming at each other. And the fact that they came and knocked on the door, I mean, honestly, that story seems more contrived and created than anything else I've seen today. Very weirdly set up. But anyway, the point of that is it's not really important because there's nothing new there. This guy is speaking out. CBS is telling a story. I mean, good for them, report on it. But there's so much more important things going on, and they're continuing to stoke the fire of this immigration debate for a reason. And that's what we have to begin to understand, that they don't want us looking at the bigger picture. Now, moving on to the stories I want to cover today, first of which is from the Zero Hedge. It's entitled Trump Rapidly Expands Cold War Era Footprint in Europe to Counter Russia. Now, the author begins by asking, does America first really mean Europe first in preparation with war for Russia? At the expense of the American taxpayer, the Trump administration wants to restore the Cold War era footprint in Europe through massive investments in military infrastructure to deter supposed Russian aggression and reinforce allies, which is it's important to understand here that to make a note of the fact that the U.S. is still using this Russian aggression lie even though Mattis just stated that they're not, that Russia is not acting with military aggression, but in fact, you know, vaguely trying to somehow undermine U.S. moral authority. This is the Secretary of Defense, by the way, saying that, very clearly stating, and I covered this recently, that Russia is in fact not using military aggression, but just some kind of trying to subvert the America moral authority, which is because they've been using that excuse forever. But still, despite the fact that he just said that, they're now still saying that, oh, well, Russia, we have to use more money to help, Europe, I guess, which is our money, our taxpayer dollars going to help Europe. And it's really odd that the administration wants to spend massive amounts of money on infrastructure projects in Europe, which is important to me, but has yet to fix America's crumbling infrastructure. Somehow the priorities of this administration of America First have been completely lost and are now in direct alignment with the military-industrial complex and Washington's warmongers. Who could have predicted this? Oh, that's right. Many of us who could see that these promises always end up falling through and the same agenda moves forward. President after president, party after party, puppet after puppet. We have to continue to see that these presidents, you know, Obama had all these promises of change and nothing happened. So did Bush. And so now Trump is doing the exact opposite. And his are more blatant than I've ever seen. You know, everything he promised is going the other direction. And we have to see that this is continuing the same way. And many people called this well before. Now, the Trump administration has now asked for $828 million in 2019 to expand and upgrade military infrastructure projects throughout Europe as part of a continuous fear-mongering campaign against Russia to allocate more money to defense, which always, of course, defense. It's not really defense. The request for additional funding would more than double the military's infrastructure projects under the European Deterrence Initiative, the EDI, from the 2018 request. According to Defense News, the EDI request increased to $6.5 billion from $4.8 billion in 2018, going to the European Defense Initiative while our country's falling apart. Another $6.5 billion going away as we ask for more money. The claim is that all of this is essentially in case Russia invades a NATO ally, which there's no evidence to suggest is you know, being planned or happening or even being worked towards. So that, you know, really this is in this event is so the U.S. Air Force can have the tools essentially to respond to this threat that's not happening in Europe. I can emphasize that point, that this is all stuff happening well outside the realm of the United States and the defense of this nation under the guise of U.S. defense. It's ridiculous. They point to actually new satellite images that show Russia may have significantly modernized a nuclear weapons storage bunker and security system at a secret facility in Kaliningrad, if I'm saying that correctly. But this seems to appear like Moscow is essentially creating a nuclear umbrella around Kaliningrad to deter from a NATO invasion. So the exact opposite of what they're claiming. And most of all of what we see now is Russia actually defense spending, not as the US does defense spending, which is essentially weapons up offense and finding ways to use them as often as possible, but actually defense measures while scaling back their overall military spending year after year, verifiably. And yet this is still used as an excuse. It's quite frustrating to see that this is how this continues to play out, that regardless of the facts, blatant and Mattis clearly saying that's not happening, they're still being used as an excuse to spend more money on the military-industrial complex. It's the same old story. I harp on this all the time, but it's just, again, we have to get this in front of people who are not aware of it. And moving on to the next story from mintpressnews.com, and in the same vein of thought here, Pentagon bets against Korean peace with indefinite troop presence and new missile defense. On Wednesday, government officials announced that the Pentagon was planning to spend around $1 billion to install a missile defense radar on the Hawaiian island of Oahu in order to track ballistic missile threats coming from North Korea. Interesting how that's happening now. The fact that the Pentagon mentioned North Korean missiles explicitly in connection with the radar while peace talks are going on is significant and very concerning. Secretary of Defense James Mattis on Thursday vowed that the 32,000 U.S. soldiers stationed in South Korea will remain in the country indefinitely as part of the U.S.'s, quote, ironclad commitment to South Korea's defense. Mattis' statements directly contradict prior statements made by President Trump on June 12th, when the president stated that he wanted to get our soldiers out of South Korea. Of course, something he just kind of says, just like we saw with Syria, but it's clearly not what's happening. Now, given the Pentagon's mention of North Korean missiles, as well as Trump's administration's failure to postpone or cancel the Oahu project, which was started during the Obama administration, the possibility is raised that aggression between North Korea and the U.S. is expected in the near future, and or that the radar is intended for use against the larger country in the Pacific region, such as China, which is also an ally of North Korea. So it's equally threatening to what they're trying to accomplish. Many experts have long maintained that China, not North Korea, is the real target of U.S. military buildup in the Pacific, and that U.S. threats and military buildup targeting North Korea have actually been aimed at curbing Beijing's military aspirations in the Pacific region, which is something we've talked about many times. And we pointed out that ultimately North Korea seems pretty clearly it's just a foothold for continuing to combat the rising, Chinese dominance of both economically and militarily in the world, and that they have to keep these aggressions going with North Korea to justify this foothold there. The point being, really, the takeaway for me here is that there's a major difference between what Trump says and what the military actually does. And there's an interesting concept there when you understand, I always go back to the Moab in Afghanistan, how Trump, it's verifiably so, had no idea they even launched the largest non-nuclear missile that they have access to, or at least at the time, and he wasn't even aware of it. And so the point is, he's given them this very unilateral ability. So the fact that we should ask the question whether or not the military is even under his control anymore. And we could have asked that question, administrations ago, but it seems very clear right now that they're just kind of progressing the military-industrial complex agenda, the deep state agenda, more so than what the people want or what Trump wants even. Very interesting. And now, in despite of the talks, the peace talks with North Korea, the U.S. continues to use them, just like we talked about with Russia, as an excuse to spend more on the military operations and offensive measures that are grossly unnecessary, almost to the point of financial negligence when we understand what's really going on, as the U.S. and its citizens are in need of much more important things than a $1 billion missile defense system to stand against a nation currently in peace talks and seeking de-escalation. Think about that. Especially knowing how much money we spend in this country, the fact that we're currently spending more, right now we're more in debt than the entire GDP of the United States, and we're unaccounted for the same amount, $21 trillion, and yet we're spending this much money on more things while we spend more than the rest of the world combined on our military. It's just, I continue to harp on this topic because in my mind, this is the most important topic that they're trying to make sure we don't pay attention to while they keep us pitted against each other. Moving on to the next story coming from geopoliticsalert.com, U.S. and Saudis liberate Yemen and with airstrikes on civilians, kill and injure 84. Now, this is clearly aligned with the topic I just talked about, with all the civilians and children dying in Yemen, where there's a complete media blackout here. Complete. They are not touching this story, which should always make us go, like, why don't they want us looking here? Or just simply the fact that when they don't talk about something, that's where we should be looking. I think that's kind of a general consensus with a lot of our viewers, but this I'm always trying to reach the average person out there. Excuse me. Now, the coalition against the tiny Arabian country of Yemen has carried out dozens of airstrikes each day for the past 2 weeks. And keep in mind that that's only slightly more than usual. Coalition countries like the United States, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates claim they are supposedly liberating Yemen from an Iranian-backed militia, but in reality, the coalition is invading Yemen, murdering civilians, and leaving famine and disease in its wake. The things that are, again, very easy to look at if you just simply look past the propaganda. It's all right there to see, and it's backed up by factual information. Citizens in Hodeidah took to the streets, actually, to condemn these blatant attacks on human rights and the U.S.-Saudi invasion of Yemen in general. In Hodeidah, the day before yesterday, airstrikes targeting a home killed 7 civilians and injured 4 others. On the same day, U.S.-backed Saudi warplanes launched 36 air raids on civilian areas and several others across the country. On Monday, the devastating attack in Hodeidah, U.S.-backed coalition warplanes terrorized civilians in Amran province by striking a home. The blast destroyed neighboring homes as well. 9 died and 20 more were wounded. 8 of those killed belonged to the same family, and the majority of deaths were teenagers and children. The youngest was just a few months old. On June 25th, coalition airstrikes targeted a security building in a very densely populated hub in Amran province. This led to the death or injury of 24 civilians. If that wasn't enough carnage, on the same day, warplanes attacked a bus of internally displaced people fleeing the U.S.-Saudi invasion of Hodeidah. 9 were killed and 11 others wounded. Now, again, this is another topic that I continue to harp on because it really horrifies me that, as I always say, this is, you know, being funded with our tax dollars, being carried out in your name. And the U.S. is deeply involved in what's going on there. Not only is the media completely ignoring the story, but we are doing the exact opposite. Not we. The United States is doing the exact opposite of what it claims to be doing, this humanitarian effort. And even they claim that their presence there somehow minimizes the Saudi, you know, genocide that's taking place, when in fact it gets even worse as the United States gets involved. And it's horrifying to see this continue to be carried out and to continue to be ignored, especially why right now the mainstream pundits, as they call themselves, are obsessed with talking about children in cages, children being mistreated. Yes, they are being mistreated. And I continue to point out, from the Bush administration, from the Obama administration, it's been ongoing for a long time. And yes, they are being mistreated, and it's horrible, but they're just being mistreated. We're talking about children, 370, in fact, they just proved more than that now, that have been killed due to the US-backed efforts in Yemen. And we're arguing over mistreated children. It just continues to kill me that people can't stand back and see how easily we're allowing our emotions to get the best of us, which is exactly what they're designed to do. Moving on to the next story, coming from theantimedia.com. World powers give the OPCW authority to assign blame for chemical attacks. The international community on Wednesday voted to boost the powers of the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog to enable it to name those behind toxic arm attacks in Syria. In Syria, just Syria. According to the text released on Twitter by the British delegation, the rare special session agreed that the OPCW secretariat said, quote, shall put in place arrangements to identify the perpetrators of the use of chemical weapons in the Syrian Arab Republic. So not the use of chemical weapons by the U.S. and Iraq, or everywhere else for that matter, or by Saudi Arabia and Yemen, or by Israel and Gaza. Nope, just the Syrian Arab Republic. That doesn't seem suspicious or contrived at all. Very clearly highlighting one little group here. And it's just, the OPCW has actually shown things in the past that were truthful as far as I understood it, but it's a UN-backed agency here that's rather controlled, I should say. So it very clearly can be used to their agenda, but to simply give one group just unilateral control to be essentially judge and executioner in regard to chemical weapons alone is, it's ridiculous. That's what these international entities are here for, to gather and analyze the evidence and put it together, even though they're largely controlled anyway. The point is, this is, in my opinion, essentially setting the stage, putting the pieces in place for the next thing that's coming up to allow them to be like, yep, we can prove it's them. And then here, look, this is OPCW said it's them. So we know it is. Move forward, you know, invade the country or whatever they're talking about. It's very clearly being set up that way. And I truly think this is the beginning, as I've said many times already, to the false flag that was predicted. And, you know, they're staging it right now, as far as I understand it, near the Al Jafra oil fields. And it's very clearly been reported on by many different people with evidence to back it up. And this is just setting the stage for that. Both apparently Moscow and the main ally of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and Damascus, they basically both vehemently opposed this move. And currently stand accused by, so they say, the international community, but it's just part of them, for using these weapons, which they completely deny. And they have every right to, because there's a lot of evidence to show that they're not at all behind this. I mean, we have OAN, who was there on the ground, who showed that the last attack in Douma didn't take place. We have Vanessa Bealey, who was there on the ground, who said the very same thing. We have the doctors on the ground there that were there during the event that all testified that it was all smoke inhalation, that there was no chemical attack. We have the boy from the video, you know, from the RT video, which is immediately dismissed by people for many reasons, which they shouldn't, only said he was lied to and he was doused with water and promised food and basically made it all up. We have demonstrable Russian evidence from the ground that show that this didn't happen. Now, all of that aside, if you want to claim all of that's created and it's all fake and none of that's true, it's, you know, it's all created, all of that aside, we have someone like Robert Fisk who was there. And had he come back and stated that he found that what he found led him to believe that Syria was guilty, of course the mainstream heralded his credentials and supported his findings. And he's still now saying that it wasn't Syria. He stated that there was no chemical attack at all. And this is roundly ignored by all unofficial positions. That's pretty striking to understand. We have to see that. And again, this is all being set up towards the next event while they ignore all the other evidence. And they're still even claiming that Syria specifically is responsible somehow, even though the U.S. itself, Mattis himself, has admitted they have no evidence. It's just like the other thing with Russia. They admit it and then continue to say it. It's just ridiculous. And this is why I do this, to get people to see how ridiculous and almost cartoonish all of this is. Moving on to the next story, coming from MiddleEastMonitor.com, U.S. officially accuses Iran of violating U.N. Security Council resolutions. U.S. U.N. envoy Nikki Haley slammed Iran Wednesday ahead of a meeting of the U.N. Security Council. Haley criticized Iran in a press release ahead of a session on U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres' latest report on the implementation of sanctions against Iran mandated by Security Council Resolution 2231. Guterres' report, quote, includes troubling but not surprising evidence that Iran has and continues to violate UN Security Council resolutions by shipping weapons across the Middle East, blatantly defying travel bans and providing support to terrorist organizations destabilizing the region. Wait, are we talking about the US here, or are we talking about Iran? I have to, you know, right? It's like, pretty, wait a minute, it's exactly what the US is doing. That's, again, kind of the point that I always get to here, is that they call these people out for things that verifiably they're doing themselves. That's very interesting. And then according to Nikki Haley in the same statement, she says, this report lays out the strongest evidence to date that the Iranian regime continues to send weapons across the Middle East and blatantly violate Security Council resolutions. She goes on to say, from the Houthis to Hezbollah to Hamas and Assad, the Iranian regime has made a habit of devoting considerable resources away from its domestic needs to support terrorism and destabilizing the region. Again, is this the U.S. we're talking about here? I mean, this is literally what we just covered. Taking money from their domestic needs to support terrorism and destabilizing the region. And there's plenty of evidence to support that for the United States. We've talked about that with, in regard to extremist groups in Syria and many other places, verifiably so. You know, moderate rebels, however they try to frame it still. But we're talking about the fact that they're calling out Iran for the very same thing here, with absolutely no evidence to support that. It's just ridiculous to see how this continues to be pushed. And then she goes on to say, the evidence in the latest report shows us all too clearly the consequences of inaction in the face of Iranian defiance, which is a barely veiled call for blatant military action. I mean, and that is alarming to see. And we, I mean, Nikki Haley, we shouldn't be surprised by this. This is what she's there to do, to foment this kind of hate and anger towards the U.S. enemies. But this story is alarming to see, and it's very frustrating to see how they continue to call these people out for the very things that they're committing. And I mean, I hope people can see through this. And I know there's a lot of people in the Security Council that stand against this, but it's also interesting to see Nikki Haley's comments against the United Nations in general, and now continuing to go through them to try to make these things happen. Pretty blatant. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from disobedientmedia.com, head of charity against sexual violence charged for attempting to arrange rape of children. Now, this is a horrible story, and it's something that's important to cover nonetheless. Now, Joe Davis, chairman of the International Campaign to Stop Rape and Gender Violence in Conflict, has been arrested in New York. He faces charges of enticement of a minor to engage in sexual activity, attempted sexual exploitation of a minor, possession of child pornography, and receipt and distribution of child pornography. The 22-year-old co-founder of a charity that advocates for victims of sexual violence was working to arrange sexual encounters with children as young as 2 years old. Just horrifying. And by the way, this was a Nobel Peace Prize nominee from 2015. Which I think after they nominated Obama, you know, lost all possible credibility that they even had left. But it just goes to show you how these people slide right into these positions. He also worked with some people like Angelina Jolie, for instance, in places like Haiti, of all places. So many different things to line up here. Now, really, this is just another perfect example of how these predators work their way into these positions, excuse me, such as charity, humanitarian aid, politics, you know, control, access is what it's all about. Just like Peter Dalglish, who was at one point the chief advisor for the UN's child labor program and was founder of one of the world's largest children's charities, and he was arrested and charged with pedophilia, possession of child porn, suspicion of child rape, and while arrested was found with two young boys at his home in Nepal. And yet we, you know, if we had spoken out about this prior to his arrest, or even about Joe Davis, or about the 34 bishops in Chile who resigned due to pedophilia, we would have been deemed conspiracy theorists by the mainstream media. Can we not see that there's a problem here? A concerted effort to conceal these horrific acts until they're forced into light by people like in the independent media specifically, and then made to seem like some kind of an isolated event, despite all the evidence to the contrary. And even beyond the disgusting and horribly illegal proclivities of so many in power, it's just a clear problem with corruption in the FBI, in Congress, in the White House, in the Vatican, in positions of authority. We must be able to stand back here and see that there is a larger control mechanism in place that shields the larger players from hardly ever being exposed and almost never being held accountable. One that exists well outside the false two-party deception. And those who are making the conscious choice to keep your heads in the sand and allow these monsters to carry on so you don't have to confront the harsh realities of the world, well, that's just cowardly. And it's also complicity. Despite the government's programmed fear-mongering of the dangers around every corner, so we think we need their overzealous protection, I have to believe that most, deep down, want to do the right thing. And that it's, in fact, the 5% of the sociopaths and psychopaths who skulk their way into these positions of power to hide in plain sight that we truly need protection from. And the only way we can do that is to recognize who the real enemy is. And it's certainly not each other. And as I always say at the end, for the more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericavagabond.com or any of the important independent sites in the show notes below. And as always, question everything and come to your own conclusions. And make sure you check us out on Patreon and any other, you know, of our many other mediums that we talk about things on, and really support us in any way you can, as well as independent media in general. And I appreciate you tuning in live today. And for those of you that may have started late and missed it, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm surprised the internet connection didn't cut off here, but my Zoom recording, about 80% of it got just deleted. It just disappeared. Like I said, that happened before to me, but this time I recorded the audio in the background, which I may still use. I don't know, since I recorded live, maybe not. But thank you for tuning in. And I'm, if you guys want to ask any questions or throwing out, I'm taking a peek at the chat now. I don't normally watch while I'm recording, but a lot of this stuff is so very important to go over. And I truly think that so much of what's going on today is just so designed to keep us from looking at the bigger picture, as I would imagine a lot of you know, and a lot of you are aware of that are watching now. But it's something that it's important that we get this stuff in front of people that wouldn't otherwise see it. Because like for instance, I had somebody speak to me the other day about, you know, why do you still broadcast on YouTube, or why do you do these things? And it's, you know, you're only helping them out. And I disagree with that, as I've said many times. It's important to reach the people who are still lost. That's why I do this. I don't do this for myself. I don't do this to promote the channel. I mean, that's obviously something we have to do to keep it all going, but we do this to reach people. We do this to, like I say all the time, if I can reach just one more person, just one person who's still watching CNN or Fox News, to come over and start thinking critically, then I succeeded that day. And so that's what this is all about. So I recommend that all of you get away from all these larger channels, but do your best to get this stuff in front of people. Go and plant that seed, and then, you know, and be patient about it. You know, walk away. If they start getting angry and red-faced, don't engage. Just plant the seed, walk away. And hopefully it'll start to grow and they'll start to see things and go back and do it a little bit later. And say, you know, what did you think about that? Like, let's have a conversation about this, because general, you know, civil discourse is completely gone today. It is being socially engineered out of our dynamic with each other, where we just can't even disagree. If you disagree with me, you're the enemy, and you need to be taken out, because you're just the enemy of the world. That's how ridiculous and hyperbolic all of this is. So, let me try to check out the comment section here. Don't really see any questions. So, I appreciate you guys tuning in again, and I guess I might be starting to do this live. I don't really mind doing it live. I honestly like to record it only because I get to add the images and everything like that for you guys to check out, so you're not just staring at my face the whole time. But if they're going to continue to screw me over somehow, I mean, I might have to do multiple live streams if I lose the connection throughout. But, and again, I don't mean to make that always seem the case. It could just be random glitch, like always. But it just seems like I'm constantly losing my recordings. The videos are constantly being taken down. So I'm going to get this to you every way that I can, and I guess try to start recording live. I might still put up the other recording, so look out for that as well. I appreciate all of you. And as I said, be sure and check out the Patreon account, because every little thing you can give us helps. because like I said, I mean, you know, those that think we're doing this for the money are quite wrong, and they don't understand that it's that we don't make very much doing this. We barely get by just doing this, and I put everything I have into this. So anything you can do to help, you know, whether it's a dollar a day or just simply sharing the video, I truly appreciate. And make sure and check us out on Steam It and DTube, where we also actually get, you know, something for the work we put in. I appreciate all of you so very much. And, you know, simply being here and discussing this and being a part of this, you're a part of the change. You know, people may think that's naive or idealistic to say, but the truth is that just opening your mind to things you may not, you know, that may be outside the box, or even being a part of the discussion, is a huge step in the right direction. That's all we can really do in some cases. So I thank all of you and I appreciate you. I'll see you next time. Stay vigilant.